Matthew, are you ready to do the podcast, Matthew?
Shut up, Thomas. Don't you fucking McElroy quote me. I'll break the fuck record on here before I'll let you McElroy me.
Will you
out
hold
of
me during the thunderstorms, Matthew?
Shit. Don't you McElroy me.
Matthew, I know it's a one-bedroom apartment.
Do you call it a McElroll when you...
Yes, I go on a McElroll.
No, when you troll somebody, like a Rickroll.
McElroll.
A McElroll. Good gravy. Or a mim-bim-bam! Just get him out of nowhere.
I hate you. I hate you so much. welcome to the negative... I hate you, Ron.
No, I said I hate you too. Not I
hate you, Ron.
Don't talk. Negative One podcast. I hate Thomas. I watched The Wrestler.
Yes.
My adult tax-paying friends like wrestling. I don't understand it, and I expect One answers. I expect answers.
It's fun.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't have...
you backpedaled that right quick.
I didn't have any, you know, like... good male role models in my life, except for my grandfather, and he wasn't always around, so I turned to wrestling. There was a study in the early 2000s that's why it had become so popular when it did.
Lack of
fatherhood. Yep.
So you see oiled up men in their tights.
And the rise, not having a good masculine, hero archetype as your part of your family unit. So you went and tried to find that elsewhere. And that's why wrestling got big when it did. It was like at the height of single parent home and blah, blah, blah. So
let's all hate the Iron Sheik.
It's past that, but yeah. Now, okay. So did you watch wrestling as a kid or?
Let's talk about this in the next segment.
Okay.
That's a complicated answer. And yet it is.
Yeah, okay.
Complicated answer. I don't get any answers out of this movie.
I was going to ask you, like, who your favorite, if you did watch them, who were your favorites?
I mean, Mick Foley. But
there's a reason why I brought that up. So, do you know who Al Snow is?
No.
Oh, man.
Is that who this movie was based on?
No, but you could see the corollaries there. Al Snow was, he was a jobber. He'd been around a long time, but... he was usually, like, during the Attitude Era, Mick Foley was the hardcore guy, right? Al Snow was, too. He did, like, hardcore stuff in Japan and stuff, but he never got as popular as Mick Foley, Mankind, Dude Love, all those, Cactus Jack did. But they started making fun of that, and they made him and a couple of his friends the jobbers. Then that was their whole story arc, was... we're just the guys that you went against to get over.
Yeah.
And he was aging. He was like on his way out. And he did some documentaries. There was a Beyond the Mat was a documentary at the time. And it showed him. He was one of the main people. And it was having watched that and then watched this. It was like, I see where they got some of their source material from was Al Snow's career.
Yeah.
So in any case, and he teaches wrestling now. Like that's just where he went on to.
Oh, he didn't die suddenly of a horrific heart attack because he was being stupid?
That's not necessarily how this movie ends, Matthew.
We both know. We know.
Matthew, what have you been doing lately, Matthew?
Shut up. You ready for this? This has been a long time.
Wah.
It's been a long time. I found a cool podcast because my friend turned me onto it.
Oh, was it my big man?
It is not.
I tried. What is it?
The 99% Invisible podcast.
I've heard of this.
It is fucking awesome. And there's like 200 and something episodes. All of them are like 20 minutes to 30 minutes. Yeah.
I've heard of it.
It's a fucking great show.
What network is that on? Do you know?
I don't know what the network is. Mm. I can pull it up in the background of us talking here. But they go through cultural items. Mm. And I'm going to name off the ones that got me interested when my friend was pushing it on me. Mm-hmm. But the... I don't know what network they're on. I can't tell. They cover things that exist in society that you don't think about or notice. So here are the...
Like dirty jobs type things?
Sometimes. So one of them is about the implications of living off the grid. That's one of the more recent ones that I listened to.
Roman Mars is the one who does it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole thing.
And then There was another one about, I collect when I can find them. I collect it. They're called service coins or service tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're called challenge coins.
Yeah, yeah. You've talked about that before.
I've been slowly collecting them and when I can get my hands on them. So, like, it's very little known that military people or agency people, so FBI, CIA, mm-hmm. Marshals, they have commemorative coins that are used. They're given to you either, like, as a gift or as a recognition, or just for service inside of a group.
End of service.
And they can be used. Typically, it turns into a drinking game where you say challenge. And if there's a whole bunch of military men in the room, if someone's missing their token and you know they're supposed to have it, mm-hmm. they have to buy the next round. But if everybody has their tokens, you have to buy the next round.
It's an interesting game.
Yeah, it's just a game. And then every...
I do not have one.
Different branches have different ones. Mm-hmm. If you're in, you know, a police force, different actual offices may have their own.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to earn some, but like it's just a big collectible thing. But that's something that they covered in an episode. Who makes the coins? How do you get them? Mm-hmm. How do you trade them? How hard are they to find? The presidents, all of the presidents have had their own coin. They get a handful and they can give them out as very, very under the table gifts.
Gotcha.
Barack Obama, there's a story about Obama giving one of his chips away to somebody. And there's a story about George Bush giving away one of his to coins, somebody. Yeah. Yeah. The presidential coin, which is probably like the king of the king.
Gotcha.
But,
interesting. 99% invisible.
And there's another one that's really cool where there's a whole ring of people who steal palm trees out of the highway at night in different like luxury cities or like in Miami or mm-hmm. something like that. Because palm trees are very expensive
mm-hmm.
and they're super rare. A good, healthy palm tree that's a good height can fetch up to $10,000 on the black market.
Oh, wow.
So there's a whole band of people who at night will go try and heist trees.
Interesting.
So that way
never would have thought of that.
Right? It's all about invisible shit that you just would never, ever know about.
Can't you just get the coconuts and or whatever?
Put the lime seeds in the coconut? Mix it all up.
Now, let me get this straight. You put the lime in the coconut.
Mix it all together.
And then you feel better.
Yeah,
that's I love.
That's correct.
Doctor.
Yeah, so that's been eating a lot of time, and it's fucking interesting.
So I've had a couple of things that... I've heard from a lot of different people that I need to listen to S-Town.
What?
So you know what Serial is, right?
Yeah.
It's a production of Serial and NPR. And it's kind of...
Serial Town?
It actually stands for Shit Town.
Oh.
And it's about a murder. It's basically...
Serial.
Serial Season 3 with a different host.
Oh.
So they made a separate podcast of it. It's not Sarah Koenig. I've heard from a lot of people that it's really good. I like the Serial series.
You know, it invented podcasting.
Yeah, I heard. It's the reason why we're doing it. yeah, the first one was good. The second one I really liked because it was about Bo Bergdahl in the military, and I was really invested in that story. This one is not that. But it is good. I'd heard from a lot of different people, you need to get on this. And I'm like, yeah, it's in my list. I've got other content that I'm listening to. I'm still behind on our own. And, but when my mom texted me and said, hey, have you heard of this podcast called S-Town? I was like, yeah, I haven't heard it. She's like, it's really good. And she doesn't listen. She listens to ours every once in a while, apparently. Sorry, mom. I was, okay, fine. So I started listening to that. Also, have been watching a show that somebody has been bugging me for years to start watching with Kerry Russell.
With what?
Kerry Russell. Do you know who Kerry Russell is?
No.
Okay. It's on the show's on FX, and it's about spies. And it's very interesting now because of things that are going on locally. It's called The Americans.
Yeah, you've heard of the Americans.
Yeah.
Never watched it.
Heard
it's a great.
Really great show.
We're almost done
with the first season.
If you like that, then you really have to watch Homeland.
See, I want to get through. Man. It was tough to get Lindsay on board to watch, because like something like that I can't watch on my own.
Yeah.
And I've been bugging her. I was like, I'm tired of hearing, we need to watch it. Let's just sit down and watch it.
Homeland is worth it. It's worth it. And then you get to the point, you're like, how long can this guy and his questionable who's his allegiance to go for? It's like, not that long.
Where is that free on? Is that on Hulu?
The first four seasons are on Hulu, yeah.
Yeah, and we're watching, I think Homeland is on Amazon, or Homeland, Americans. And I think it's the first three or four seasons. So once we get through that, I think we'll come back to it. Yeah, that is something that we're catching up on. And then also, one of my favorite books by my absolute favorite author, Neil Gaiman, American Gods started about 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's about halfway through the season of on Stars, and we have Stars. I still have Stars for this show. I love American Gods, the book, and the show is, it diverges a bit, but it's really good. I recommend it.
I never read the book.
But yeah, the American spy, 1980s Russian spies, what was that called? Like a sleeper cell?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'll have to watch those things.
Yep.
The wrestler.
Wrestler. Man.
We flew through that.
Yeah, we did.
It's going to be a short episode.
Probably. Especially since you apparently don't like wrestling as a whole. Like the institution of wrestling.
So I did want to see this movie when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a problem that no one wanted to see it with me. Which is interesting considering how many people I know that apparently like wrestling.
Why did you want to see this movie if you weren't a fan of wrestling?
I heard it was really good and I like Mickey Rourke.
I like Mickey Rourke. No, yeah. This was before, this was what brought him back.
Yes.
To acting.
Yes. And I really like Mickey Rourke. I think he's great. So that, and I knew it was a serious drama and I knew that it was not a fun story.
At first I thought it was a biography of someone. And I couldn't figure out who.
I was going to ask you if that was the deal. It kind of felt like a weird blend of pre-fall Hulk Hogan mixed with a little bit of Hitman Hart before his
before the Montreal Screwjob. And see, I know what these things are. You don't. You just gave me that look like, what?
Yeah. Well, I know because I've watched Wrestling with Shadows, that Hitman Hart documentary, which is actually very good.
Did they talk about the Montreal Screwjob?
Yeah, where he got completely fucked over.
He got fucked over because he was leaving and they weren't going to let him leave with the title.
So stupid.
All
of it.
And what's funny is, okay, so Mick Foley is one of my favorite wrestlers. I would say he's my favorite wrestler as a human, as a person, but my favorite wrestler character was Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
I just don't get it.
It's part of when I got really into it. So I watched wrestling as a kid.
Is he finally done or does he still wrestle?
He special occasion wrestling. When you've been around for so long, you take other positions within the company, you start writing, things like that. And he did, of course, he married a McMahon in real life. So he is part of like the board of directors.
Dynasty.
Yes, he very much is. So he plays as the COO of the company, and he is the COO and the head of the writer's room. So he does both sides of that, which is interesting because that's where this whole Montreal Screwjob is about, this thing called the Click, which was a bunch of wrestlers who were just like, you can't tell us what to do. We're basically our own small union. And we're going to write our own stories and shit. And that's what happened. That's when he got in with Vince McMahon. He started dating Stephanie. Anyway, he is my favorite because when I was watching it, he was one of he was part of DX. He was one of the bigger names. But he wasn't Stone Cold Steve Austin, who I didn't like, really. I mean, I kind of liked him, but I couldn't get behind him.
You liked him because it was a requirement to be American.
Right. He wasn't The Rock, you know, all these big guys that I did like, but it was like something about this anti-hero that wasn't about being a redneck that I liked about him. Anyway, so and he's still my favorite character to watch, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, because he can do both. But Mick Foley is my favorite human man.
Well, because he's chaotic neutral.
Yeah, a little bit. And he's still in it. He's back on WWE now.
Is he announcing or is he wrestling?
No, he's...
Because he's like really fucked up. He can't wrestle anymore, right?
No, he's more of a... Because he's a living legend.
Yeah. And they're dying left and right, which is...
But he's not a living legend who's still active. He's a living legend in that he plays his characters well. So he plays like a... He's a GM for one of the brands. He's a GM, I think, of Raw. So they use him to push stories, to set up matches and be like the police guy. And he's in the writing room as well. And he does a really good job at that stuff. I think that that is one of the nicest things that's come out of how wrestling has evolved,
mm-hmm.
and how stories like this, The Wrestler and Beyond the Mat and things like that, have pushed the development of writing and wrestling so that when you get to a certain point, if you were good, you don't have to just keep putting your body through that. As long as you can work the crowd and speak well and do that part of it very well, they can find another place for you that's not on the mat.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's people like The Undertaker who play their character very well, but they're not charismatic. They're not mic people, you know, that can do shoots like that. And so he's a legend, but he's got to be out there every couple months putting his body through torture because his character can't be anything but that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, no, but we'll talk about that in a little bit.
All right. Let's talk.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm judging you. Let's take our break. I'm being overly asshole-ish about it on purpose.
Well, yeah, because I admit, there's points that you want to talk about.
Well, because I want to know. So I kind of want you on the defense so that you, sure. you bare your teeth a little bit. I have motives.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's take our break and we can talk about your previous experience with wrestling and then what you thought of the movie.
Yes.
All right. Well, you're by the button.
Yes. When I grew up...
No, wait. The other thing, I know I just rattled off a bunch of different things that I've been doing. Bill Nye the Science Guy is back.
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet?
No.
What are you waiting for?
I don't know.
I might assign that to you.
Free time?
So good. Kind of proselytizing, but...
Yeah, and that...
But that's not surprising from Bill Nye.
No, he's getting older, he's getting frustrated. He's getting frustrated and he's taking it up as a cause.
Bill Nye.
Which is nice.
Bill Nye. Good.
It's he's
good.
Shutting down flat earthers, which is the only thing that matters to me.
And climate change deniers.
Did see that they censored, GMO stuff. I did see that they censored the episode where he said that there's two sexes. Fucking ridiculous.
No, physically there are. Well, mentally, no. There's not.
Physically, technically, you have hermaphroditic reassignment, yeah. Automatic birth reassignment. So,
yeah it's
there's, there's
true.
Multiple by birth, but
I don't remember. Maybe that was the one I fell asleep to. I was watching it when I wasn't feeling good, which is normal.
Yeah.
Anyway, you.
Yes.
When you grew up, you
when
said?
When I first started getting exposed to wrestling, Triple H was a bad guy. DX was broken up.
Uh-huh.
Kane was still knocking around, but I think it was towards the end of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The WWE-WCW crossover had happened or was just happening.
Okay. So that would have been... Yeah, that was the...
And Triple H was a bad guy.
They bought the WCW.
Yeah. And then a lot of the guys just dropped out rather than getting assimilated in.
Mm-hmm. They ended up starting TNA.
Like Sting was starting to do, the TNA and all that.
Yep.
So here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a very, very young kid, I saw it and said, wow, this is so fake. And then on top of that, they like the story and the persona and all that stuff. And I'm like, wow, I don't like this.
Probably 5 years too late, because that was a bad time. It really was.
And apparently, it's just a bad place to go in.
Yep.
I've heard that since.
The branding stories where they bought... When they bought WCW, who was their biggest competitor, right? it was because WCW made some really bad decisions. And so they bought that. They bought ECW, which was not really a competitor. It was just another thing that was on. When that happened and they started doing the brand cohesion, where they were bringing in all the talent and all that, that was both gratifying for people who were of the WWE camp, who kept saying it's better than WCW. That was really gratifying, but it also meant that there was nothing that they were competing against. So why would they put out great content when they could put out content?
That makes sense.
So you came in probably 5 years too late. That was the early 2000s.
No, I think I had exposure to it earlier than that then. But that was when it would have been the moment that I would have latched on.
Right.
And I had been watching it
before
the whole,
that you would have been too young.
Yeah, it would have been about 5 years old. So between 5 and 11, I had exposure. People around me watched it. I wasn't interested.
Mm-hmm.
I had a moment to get interested. I'm like, I don't fucking care about this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just don't. I don't get it.
Sure.
I don't.
It's not marketed to you anymore.
I don't understand the idea of and I mean this because there's no other good parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Building soap opera figures that are just pure masculinity with different story arcs and chemical mm-hmm. arcs, and to then fake, but not fake, but fake physically fight one another mm-hmm. in a very odd series of rules and styles and a 3-count pinfall. But it's silly. To me, it just reads silly. And so, I can't get invested in it. Mm-hmm. I can't get interested in it. It's just, it is not for me.
That's fair.
It's not for me.
And here's the thing. You're a martial artist. That right there
makes it hard.
Precludes you from anything else. Because when you see this same kind of physical activity, there's a story there that doesn't have to be done in lines and acting. It is like a boxing match. That's the story.
Well, and I don't discredit, you know, they talk about sports are the greatest drama on earth
mm-hmm.
because it either goes your way or it fails.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disagree with that. I might not like football a whole lot because football has gotten too big for its britches in the last 10 years.
I would agree.
It's got a fucking slowdown, and it's starting to, they're losing viewership and they're starting not to sell shit out because people are tired of it. I can appreciate the drama of all of it, but it's the natural drama. It's not a story arc that they force behind some guy fake bum rushing somebody and then fake punching him and the whole crowd going, and everybody's got a sign and how can you.
But it's very interesting that you say that, because we've had this discussion about sports and rivalries where you said it's a rivalry because you guys are close and it's manufactured by the league,
or it's manufactured by a series of penalties that just
fans,
they build a whole dissension among.
Sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's fake and sometimes it's real and blah, blah, blah. That to me is no different than wrestling. It's just the wrestling was written in a back room and they know what's going to happen.
And I guess I'm okay with it, but it's one of those things that I'll watch.
I get it. It's not for everyone.
It's not for me. And I have a real hard time. What's the appeal to you?
To me? Well, I don't watch it regularly right now. Every once in a while, I'll pick it up. But it is about watching that. It's getting behind someone, finding someone that you like, that you kind of relate to, or that you like the style of, or whatever. And then getting behind that person and watching, because you don't know when it's going to happen. You start to see patterns, for sure. If you watch it for a while, you know how a match is going to go, for the most part. You know somebody's going to run in because this is an important match, and that means that they're not going to get the belt, whatever, right? But you watch that struggle, and you watch them try to climb up, and there is a ranking system and things, and you want that guy to succeed. That's what got me into it. To begin with, I watched somebody who was not very popular become popular and then corrupt themselves, which is always fun. Watching a face, a good guy, make a heel turn, become a bad guy is always fun. And the heels are almost always more interesting.
Hmm.
I like that stuff. It is kind of the over produced, you know, soap opera kind of bullshit. But I also like the things that I like the most are when they're talking smack and it's funny. It was funny in the early 90s that that smack talk was really good. Like just riffing The Rock. Mm-hmm. Nobody could do it like he could back then. Jericho. Nobody does it like he does. You kind of rally behind that stuff. Nowadays, I don't know these guys. So I don't watch it all the time. So I don't know. I know their names, but I don't know anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people who do watch it who are like, oh, you know, Roman Reigns and he's this, that, and the other. And they're still experiencing the things that I experienced, you know, when I was 17. Also, when I was 17, it was being marketed to me and my demographic.
Should you have grown out of it?
Yeah. So and so, like I said, I don't watch it all the time like I used to. But I will turn it on every once in a while.
Now, I will fully admit,
it's still fun to watch. I'll say this. This is my favorite. Just like boxing, my favorite is Bantam and Lightweight because they're scrappy and quick and there's the dance. We talked about it during the Creed episode. Yeah. I like flyers and luchador style wrestling when I'm watching WWE because real or not,
oh, it's insane.
Watching someone jump 7 feet in the air and fucking do a flip Hurricane Rana is awesome.
I'll never criticize the physicality mm-hmm. of wrestling. That's the one thing I want to be very clear.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who get the shit kicked out of yeah. them. A break fall does not feel good.
No.
It don't feel fucking good.
But it's not about that. I mean, I get that these are people putting their bodies to the ringer and they're doing that on purpose. You know, they're doing that for the fans. But you can't watch probably the most famous one of
Mankind
all.
Mankind falling through that cage.
Mankind, Hell in the Cell against Undertaker in 1987, I believe it was. Not when he went through the cage.
When he went through the table.
When he went from the top of the cage yeah. through the table. That's an extra 4 feet through a breakaway table. You see that and in like the crowd starts chanting, holy shit. Because he signed up to do that. He talked to the Undertaker. That's the thing that they kind of show in this movie.
Yeah.
You're talking through it. The best fights are against two people who are rivals on screen, but are best friends in real life. Because they know what each other's limitations are, and they give you the best physical matches. Undertaker and I don't remember Undertaker's real name. I used to know it. And Mick Foley were friends during that whole rivalry for a year. They were building. They knew that this is where they wanted to go with it. And then they did it. And
Mick Foley should have died.
He should have died. He had a tooth through his nose, if you remember. But even if you're not a fan of wrestling and you don't understand all that history, if you just watch that entire match, that 20-minute match, you would watch it and go, that was spectacular.
Yeah.
It was completely worthless. I'm no better for having seen it, but I was thoroughly entertained for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
That was me ranting for 10 minutes on why wrestling is actually positive-ish.
That's fine.
But Ram Jam.
This movie is so different than what I would have ever expected.
It's the human side.
It is so fucking human, it hurts.
Well, Lindsay asked me, she says, well, why would we watch this? Because I've been trying to get her to watch it.
It's a drama with a different frame of reference.
That's exactly what it is. And she says, is it about this guy's career? Well, sort of. But it's more about the relationships he has with other wrestlers, with this woman that he's got a crush on, with his daughter, who doesn't even come into the movie until halfway through.
Yeah.
The wrestling part is just driving the story along. Gives him an outlet and a goal.
They could have done it with dirt bike.
Yeah.
Stunts.
Oh, he could have been a rail worker. He could have been a deli guy the entire time, and this would have been a nice little indie movie.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
With a heart condition.
Well, and it, man, speaking of heart, not to do the cheesiest rollover, this film has so much heart.
Yeah, it's a cheesy rollover.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
When he gets locked out and he sleeps in the van.
Yes.
And he comes out to all the kids.
Oh yeah, and they all want to wrestle.
And they just want to play with the ramp. Who they don't know. They know this guy's a wrestler, but they don't know him when he was big, when he was Hulk Hogan big, right?
Yeah.
They just see the guy in the neighborhood, and I grew up with some of these, and hell, my uncle is one of them, who's like, if you're a kid and I know you from the neighborhood or whatever, yeah, I'll toss a ball with you. Right. I don't have to know you well. You know, we just have to have some sort of relationship that I know your parents and it's okay for me to toss a football with you. Yeah, that's fine. That's how my uncle was. That's how this guy is. He's just like, yeah, I mean, you kids got to do something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big kid. Let's play wrestle, whatever. And it comes off as creepier as I mean it to.
That's why I'm being silent.
Yeah.
I did yes, think... Thomas, tell us about Penn State.
I did think in that same vein, the Nintendo, like, hey, you want to come in my house and play Nintendo?
That was a little creepy. That was a moment.
Yeah. But he didn't mean anything by it. He was just trying to be nice to the neighborhood kids who had a bad lot in life to begin with. They lived in a trailer park, for God's sake.
Yeah. It's down on his luck. Body failing. Mm-hmm. Body needed. you kind of need all your faculties. I was very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Very surprised. This reminded me very, very much of Kill Bill, the guy living out in the trailer, run down.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of the former syndicate. He had the short end of the stick at all times. Like, I would totally watch a movie just about him. I feel like this is kind of that movie.
Yeah, made some bad decisions in his life.
It's kind of that movie.
Did you feel like Randy, Robin, Ram?
Robin.
As
I fucking laughed every time they showed that stupid name tag.
Like he was he chasing his glory or was he just doing what he had to do because it's all he knew how to do?
That's he needs it like oxygen. And I got that.
So he was chasing his glory.
No. He needs to wrestle like it's oxygen. So like it's guitar. If I don't play guitar over the course of a week, I become a cranky fuck. I just do. I do. You go a couple days without coffee after being a regular coffee drinker. You become a cranky fuck. Try and quit smoking. Become a cranky fuck. It's just literally a part of his being and personality. That's just what it is. And I don't think it has anything to do with him wanting to be the biggest name in the world again, because he's doing all those shit gigs and looks plenty happy about it.
That's true.
He does his routine. He shows up. He does his job. It's successful. Because if you notice when he does that celebrity signing, it's a complete and utter shit show.
And he's after he didn't what celebrity signing, which one?
The fan expo, whatever. Like the other guy falls asleep next to him and all that kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I
thought you were talking about.
But that was a very clear scene that the fame aspect of it was so secondary that when he stopped and questioned it for a second, he did walk away and he did retire.
But was it worth the money? And
yeah, well, okay, the fame part of it's completely farce. Maybe maybe the whole thing is farce. So let me try and do real life for a minute.
That was after he had his
heart attack.
So he was already told you need to slow it down some, and he was trying to find ways for him to still make money.
I think
so. That's part of it as well. But the part that killed me in that same regard was he had just done this little wrestling, and there are little wrestling.
There's tons of them.
Yeah, we have one here that used to be part of the training regiment for WWE, Miami Valley Wrestling. That does it in high school gyms and stuff. They set up the ring there and all that. And then after he did that, he didn't get as much money as he was expecting because there wasn't as many people. They got a percentage of the gate.
Well, that's how the movie opens up, is he's sitting in a fucking a first grade playroom covered in blood and sweat. And I was like, oh, this is where we're starting.
Yeah.
All right.
Because that's how it is. And then he leaves and he doesn't get as much
time
money.
Time for time out. What you going to do, brother?
But he took time for a couple guys that were hanging around. Like, can you sign my poster? Like, no money. He's just, I remember you when I was 5 years old and I saw you take on the Ayatollah. Can you sign this poster? Like, you're a legend. What are you doing here?
Right.
Which is sad. I'm trying to think of some of the ones that were really good that never really came back. Like Superfly Snuka.
Yeah.
He just recently passed.
He just recently passed away.
You know, Brutus the Barber Beefcake never came back to wrestling. He wrestled until he started doing the underground, you know, smaller venues and stuff. I mean, you get that. And they were legends, but they never achieved or kept that fame. And this guy didn't. It's kind of sad. I'm kind of upset about it.
His attempts at real life.
He failed at life.
And that's, I think, what hurt the most is that when he decides to actually hang it up because he has no choice.
Yeah.
And he realized, oh, wow, I really suck at being an adult. Like, I suck at being a human. I suck at being an adult. I can give this a try. And it starts to look positive. And he just can't hold it together. And he parties with that girl. Defined party. Oh, you know, like fireman.
The fireman party.
Wakes up with those fucking boots on. Oh, I got that.
Lindsay started laughing.
That got a very audible laugh out of me. But it was just, that's desperation. And he just
tired of feeling nothing. He just
can't fucking do it right.
So, yeah, speaking of that, when he takes that snort, I was like, the first time I saw it, I was like, what are you doing? Come on, dude.
Well, and I will admit, I was so invested in this movie and was not prepared to be that invested. Like, when he has his heart attack, I was grabbing my chest.
Really?
And then when he tries to go for his jog, and you're just like, no.
And he only makes it 10 steps.
He and you're does like, not make it far. And then he hits a tree. And you're like, fuck, is he having a heart attack in the woods?
No, right he was now? Just, he was just, he right. was gassed.
But that, like, they do, they rope you in so hard to this guy that he doesn't have much. He's only good at a few things. If he needs to work hard, like when he works at the grocery store, and that was one of the small details that really worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
When he has to work at anything, he works hard.
Mm-hmm.
He was joking with the customers. He's being really good at the deli counter. He's doing his job. He's lifting shit when he's in pain. He's a hard, dedicated worker. However, he can't take this thing out of his DNA and his blood. And he's bad at life and existence. Without it.
Here's the problem that I had with this. It's interesting that you say the grocery, because he asked for extra hours. They put him in the front, and he doesn't want that. And he knows why he doesn't want it. They don't talk about it. But he like, they put him at the deli counter, and he's good at it.
Yeah.
He interacts with the people well because he's a showman. And I did think the one time he went too far, and I was like, dude, okay.
When he throws the stuff in the guy's basket.
In the basket. And I was like, okay, yeah. You could get fired for that bullshit. Stop doing that. you need a talking down too. But it was, and he was, even with everything that was going wrong, with his daughter, with his stripper friend.
He was getting the showmanship and thought it was replacing and sufficing for everything.
And it worked.
For a while.
For a while. But then when everything else started to go downhill, he was still doing it. He was okay. He was taking the steps. He was upset.
Right.
But he was doing it as a human being.
And then the guy recognizes
him as Randy.
And that's when he breaks. And also the whole time,
fuck this.
That scene was happening and his hand was in that fucking machine.
You knew?
Dude, my eyes were covered the whole time. The whole time. Because those fucking machines, you know about me and getting fingers cut off. That scares the fuck out of me. So I watched that whole scene with my eyes covered.
But you knew that was going to happen.
Well, I didn't realize he was going to punch it.
Well, yeah, he jammed his thumb in it. But that was the point, was you knew he could take it because of the hardcore wrestling scene that he had done not too far before that.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, that was pretty fucking brutal. That was fucking
nuts. Those kids are fucking out of their minds.
So you had asked
why?
Me.
Why?
Because that's what the customers want.
Oh, my goodness.
Mick Foley, known for hardcore.
I know.
And what you don't see with Mick Foley specifically, yeah, he puts his body through a lot. Some of the most brutal matches he'd ever done was with Al Snow. Al Snow, I had talked about, I had talked about it before. This is basically his life, except for instead of quitting, he changed and became a teacher, which is where I think if you were writing a real story, this where this could have went. he was a hardcore dude. He did it and put his body through some really terrible shit to where he couldn't walk in the morning sometimes.
It cracked me up how fucking padded up his elbows were.
And just how gingerly he moved until he got in the ring.
Yep. And then it was, fuck it, it hurts, but whatever.
Right. I was really... When I first saw this, I was really impressed with the humanity. It sounds like you were too.
It's undeniable. I mean, you can't watch this and not be moved by what's going on. The question is, does all the context work? Does all the plot work? Does the device lose you? Does the wrestling not make sense?
What'd you think?
I think it works. I think it works. Now, we can talk about the elephant in the room.
Hmm?
Marissa Tomei being naked for half the movie.
Her tits all over the...
All right, now we're done talking about the elephant in the room.
They were just out for most of the movie.
It just cracked me up every time one of the younger male patrons is like, no thanks, Grandma. I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Are you kidding?
Or go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself right in your ass.
When she was trying to do the private party, when they first introduced you.
He fucking shows up and blasts that guy in the face.
Right, and there went $300 for a $60 lap dance.
Right.
But, I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. I'm sorry. She's in shape in this movie.
She's hot. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm amazed.
It would be disrespectful to say anything
else. I'm amazed at how good she looks for her age in this movie. But they do, like, do some close-ups on her face to show this is not,
right,
you know, a 20-year-old.
Well, and their date, no makeup, and which was great and all that.
Stripper makeup.
No, when they went on their date.
Oh, yeah, the no makeup.
She was no makeup, frumpy clothes.
Yeah. I like that. I like that it was two very flawed human beings.
Yeah.
And that was doing the things that it wasn't just a job. It's what they had to do.
Yeah.
What they had to do. And the only thing they knew how. And the fact that he had that relationship with a stripper, because who else is going to understand him? She's going to understand. You do this because you have to.
Yeah.
I do this because I have to feed my kid. You do this because this is what you need.
Yeah.
I'm doing all the talking.
Yep. let's take our last break.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
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 Sunday! I'm sorry.
Really?
It took way too long for us to do that.
Dude, before we do last looks and talk about in grade and all that, the one thing that I wrote down, having watched this again, knowing, because I did rewatch it, knowing that you were going to be the person reviewing it with me, what did you think of the hard cuts that happened during music? Because it feels like that was a very specific, like when they decided to cut from one thing to another, it was a very hard cut in the middle of lyrics of a song and not at like the end of a verse. It was before a word would happen.
The sentence was, so this is Scott Pilgrim style musical editing and it was fucking great.
Yeah. It almost always was talking about what was going on.
Yeah. Don't know what you got.
Till it's...
Cut. And then he's just lonely, sitting by himself, licking his wounds,
right,
locked out of his house.
I did not notice that the first time. I think it was very jarring, and it wasn't something I would have been looking for when I watched this when it came out.
I'm used to it when you start to... I notice it quick.
I notice it now.
I noticed it very quick, but it works, like, the whole time.
That was the one thing that I picked up and was like, oh, he's going to love that.
They put the music supervisor's name in the opening scrawl credits, which is relatively rare.
Mm-hmm.
But when they did that, it's John Black, I think is who did it.
Okay.
Or Jeff Black. He did an amazing...
Jack Black.
No, it was not Jack Black.
I know it wasn't.
Because I rewound it. I'm like, was it Jack Black did the music for this? But when they included him... That sometimes is a nod that you need to pay attention. And then they did that one, that particular edit, and it confirmed. I'm like, oh, shit. Also, perfectly selected soundtrack, because everything was like perfect height of
80s music.
The other thing that I did notice and I loved is that they had the American flag thing. Like
very much Hulk Hogan. It was very much a nod to him.
It was a very good statement of wrestling in the 80s and that whole period. Like, it was just like, it was synonymous with patriotism, and why I don't quite know, but I saw how consistent that was.
I'm amazed. So I went looking when you mentioned about the sound editing or the soundtrack.
Yeah.
No awards for that. But I am amazed at how many awards this film won.
Yeah.
And was nominated for. Like, I knew it was an award winner, but I didn't know how many and how big they were. Academy Award nominated, no win, for Mickey Rourke and for Marissa Tomei.
Both completely fucking deserving.
Yep. For lead actor and supporting actress. Nominated, not won. But BAFTA,
whew,
Mickey Rourke. I mean, that's a big one, right?
Yeah.
What was the other one? Golden Globe.
Oh, the Golden Globes is all the foreign.
Yeah, the Golden Globes is the Hollywood Foreign Press. One for Mickey Rourke. And also the song during the credits, The Wrestler, which I didn't actually listen to.
I don't remember who wrote that.
Springsteen.
Springsteen, yeah.
Which makes sense because it all takes place in Jersey.
Yeah. Which there was a very, very particular call out. They mentioned it a couple of times. I'm like, hey, pork roll.
Taylor Ham. And the boardwalk and all that.
Right. So I thought that that was all great. I can grade this movie now. This thing's an A and it's undeniable. It's undeniable. It's undeniable.
Oh, really? No star, no asterisk?
This is a very well-built story about ingrained passion in an individual to the point that it's a complete fault to result in a responsible human.
Yes.
Which
I've seen. And you could call that a workaholic's disease, whatever.
I get kind of frustrated with the trope of failed parent and the child's, you know, vehement reaction to it, but him bonding with his daughter
and then losing it,
and then
it,
him breaking down and just saying, I just don't want you to hate me. I have nothing, but the thing I need to know is that you don't hate me. I just need that little.
Yeah.
And when that blows up in his face ultimately, and he notices,
which he does to himself.
Yeah, he does.
With
and
the
he starts
party.
To notice how frail thin his reality outside of his passion is. He said, well, fuck it. I'll go out on my shield. And just fuck it.
So that final match.
Yeah.
The Rocky match that they have.
Yeah.
Him and Ayatollah. That is exactly what it's reminiscent of, is that Apollo Creed Rocky fight that they have with nobody around. So he overdoes it. You could see him working his heart. Right?
I'll say it, Thomas. He dies.
That is how it's implied.
As soon as they turn around and Marissa Tomei, Pam, is not watching.
Yeah.
His whole old life is absolved. He is completely free to just die on his shield in the environment he wants. And this isn't like Birdman where it's like, what the fuck happened?
So you think he does the Ram Jam?
Ram Jam and the landing on his chest. I think that
his heart
it.
Just yeah. explodes.
My interpretation. But yeah, his heart's fucked. He's okay. fucked.
I'm just wondering.
That's
because they don't talk about it.
No, and but it's the only thing that makes sense, and it's.
I agree, but it is supposed to be one of those ambiguous endings. Is this his last match, or is it his last breath?
Right.
So, I'm very happy that you liked it.
I did. It doesn't. It. But the thing is this doesn't make me feel any better about wrestling, and that's the thing. I was shocked. That I was hoping I'd get some perspective and information and understand this culture, and I got none of it. But that just shows how universally solid this movie actually is.
Did you like, and this is one of the reasons why I liked it, is because it felt like a bit of the behind the scenes.
Oh, and yeah. I liked that a whole lot. For as much as I'm saying that the wrestling piece of it is secondary and you could have done this in different environments, they were very clear, respectful, and accurate to what I believe wrestling in the background is like. Even the drug trade and all that stuff.
And that was a big thing. Now, a lot of those guys were wrestlers. They really were wrestlers. Yeah. In fact, I recognized a couple of them from their runs in the WWE. I couldn't tell you what their names were. There's the one dude's particular, I can't remember what he wrestled as. But it was back when I would watch it with my son, I don't know, in the mid 2000s or like late mid 2000s.
Right.
Who's the black dude with all the piercings?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. He had right after this movie had come out, he had made a WWE contract and was starting to be get a pretty big heel turn or a big face turn. So becoming a hero. But there was controversy because of, you know, these were wrestlers who were admitting to the steroid.
The steroid use, the drugs, the fakeness,
The fakeness, it's by then everybody knew. Yeah.
Was there really a period where people didn't know? In the 80s?
Well, okay, so there's the Jerry the King Lawler thing. That's the Andy Kaufman thing.
Oh, yeah.
So you've seen Man on the Moon, right? You know that story with Andy Kaufman. Okay, you've not.
No, I know about Andy Kaufman, and I know about his whole public performance art.
Yes. As the wrestler, as the intergender.
Yeah.
Wrestling, but where I don't only wrestle women.
But I don't know the whole tale in Man on the Moon and the whole nine yards.
Okay, well, Jerry Lawler was a wrestler. He's now, I don't even know if he's still doing, I don't think he is anymore, but he was an announcer for a long time too with WWE.
Is he like the main guy, like, whoa, that guy?
Yeah, he was the color commentator.
That's, I was going to make a joke about the same two commentators.
Yeah, because they were for the longest time. They're not anymore, but it was Jerry Lawler and Ross. I don't remember Ross's actual name, but he was like the straight Perot. Dude. No.
Ross Perot.
He was, Jim Ross was his name. Jim Ross was like the professional announcer.
Yeah.
And then Jerry Lawler was the color guy who would always take the bad guy's side to kind of interject some assholery. Well, Jerry Lawler was once interviewed by somebody and was like, you know, why don't you just tell us it's fake? We all know it's fake. This is in the 80s. And there, that was when it started to come out that wrestling was faker than people thought it was. And he just bitch slaps this reporter like hard and ends up getting sued for it.
Wait, in the face? Yes, with his hand?
Yeah, like ham. Wah.
He bitch slapped
him? And he was like, him. It was a dude.
He bitch slapped a dude?
Yeah, and he was like, tell me, did that feel fake, asshole?
This is
the thing that happened, yeah. So, and that perpetrated the whole Jerry Lawler versus, there was a feud between him and Andy Kaufman to where they actually fought on David Letterman's show, like fought.
Like,
all, it was fake. But,
oh, I've seen that footage.
Yeah. But you could not tell sometimes. So yeah, that it's fake, but how fake is it really? I mean, you get people who blow out their knees.
All right. So I'm not into wrestling, but that's a great story.
There's a lot of those.
That's a fucking great story.
You know, and you know, as a fan from back then, I used to love that behind the scenes. Beyond the Mat is actually a really good documentary, I thought. You know, that's where I learned that in reading the books and things from these guys. That's where you learn that the best matches that you've ever seen are between friends. Some of the worst matches you'll ever see are just between some guy that doesn't want to stoop down to your level because he's trying to do something for himself.
Yeah.
And he doesn't take a fall. Like he should. And that just ruins it. And that stuff's fun for me. Seeing the stuff in the background.
Right.
Watching this guy trying to be a mentor and seeing all these young kids that are really into it. That was what sold me on the movie before the actual, you know, humanity part of it.
Yeah.
I recommend, if you read, I would recommend reading like Mankind's book.
I actually do want to read that.
And I've The heard Rocks that, isn't bad either.
I've heard that Mankind's book is great.
Well, his first one. He's done like three or four. And they're all good, but that one's like really in the background.
I don't know. I was hoping to get some kind of clarity about why wrestling is great out of this movie. Because my dad's into it with my brother. Like, that's one of the things. That's one of the things. My dad couldn't. I was trying to find a thing to bond with my brother over.
Mm-hmm.
So I took him to Monday Night Raw one time. In Cincinnati, US Bank Arena.
It takes time.
It was fun. I had fun there, but I still wasn't into it.
You have to invest in a storyline. Because it doesn't make any sense if you just watch an episode of Raw.
Yeah.
And you don't understand what's going on.
And I think that that's the thing, is I was trying to go into this with one viewing experience, mm-hmm. and it was totally not that thing. It just, it didn't answer any questions I had about that section of my life. But what I got was a fucking A material. I do want to take a minute and stress that there is zero bad acting in this movie.
No.
Mickey Rourke is amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
No, I wouldn't say that that's true. I would say that the daughter was a bad actor.
The daughter was a bit stiff and rough, yes. but she just needed to be moody, and it worked. Yeah. It was more about giving him something to play off of, which I'll take.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
But yeah, I mean, the cast was not many.
Well, and there's little shit in there too, and I'll come back to it, but Marissa Tomei, outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Todd Barry, fucking coming out of nowhere as the grocery store manager. Yep. I liked him a whole lot.
Dick, but you get where he's coming from.
How about you knock? Let's try this again. Yeah, seriously. He knocks on the door. Get the fuck out of here. And he just walks past him.
And he has the name tag that says Robin, and he says, I don't know, it came off your W-4, which you know is bullshit. Do I have to, can I just not wear it? No, you're special. Yes, you have to fucking wear it. Yeah, you're that guy. You're an asshole.
But how much of an asshole? Because he's going really out of his way for that guy.
Right. Constantly. He is, but he's also giving him shit.
Yeah. Which, that's the way it works.
That's how it goes.
You get a favor, you're going to get some shit.
Yeah.
There was some small directorial choices that I liked, which is that when he finds his trailer and it's padlocked shut and he sleeps in his van, mm-hmm. and when he and his daughter finally bond again,
mm-hmm.
she kicks open a padlock.
Yes.
And it's one of those moments that your youth is supposed to surprise, entertain, and enlighten you. And it was so small.
Mm-hmm.
That padlock shut him out, and he probably could have just kicked it open.
Then again, that's his house versus an abandoned casino.
And that could have been a different symbol, mm-hmm. right? But it could have been them saying, oh, she kicked open the locks that were on this relationship. Oh my God, heavy handed. Talking about the metaphors out loud make them sound really stupid.
Yeah, they do.
It's just a syndrome of film. You get used to it. But I did also take that as her flip educating him on situations he was stuck in, and she has the potential to push through.
I wish they would have talked about the mother.
I do too. I interpreted it enough.
You didn't need to. You could extrapolate what you could from the story.
The other thing that I got out of that too is that the padlocked situation that mm-hmm. she was able to overcome is that once their relationship fails,
mm-hmm.
he knows that she will be fine to continue her life without him.
Right.
I also had a hard time interpreting if that was her roommate or her girlfriend.
I think they did that on purpose. Because he mentioned, I think she's a lesbian. And Marissa Tomei is like, and?
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny. Things.
I thought that was an ambiguity that was interesting.
Well, here's the thing. Not that
it didn't fucking matter.
No, it didn't. Not that I'm proud of the fact that I noticed this, but the first time she opens the door, and it's the black girl, she doesn't have a bra on. And her headlights are on, and I'm like, you don't just walk around, even with roommates, you don't just walk around without a bra on. Yeah, they're together.
That's a point. That's a
fair point. There are two of them.
I was wondering where you were going with this.
There were two of them. Trust me, I noticed. Now, I'm not proud of it, but I did notice.
That's a good point, though.
That's two good points.
Yeah, stop it.
Actually, Marissa Tormit, that's four good points.
Stop talking. Stop talking. Also, last thing, Mickey Rourke was fucking shredded in this movie.
He was.
Holy.
But also kind of saggy. Like, he was a little bit of both.
Old man shredded.
Yes.
Which is terrifying.
Right. Like Hulk Hogan.
I would never fuck with that guy.
Right.
You don't want to fuck with old guy shredded. Up
for this movie.
Specifically. A bunch.
Yeah, a ton. Because look at him in Iron Man 2, which was a few years later.
Still big.
He was big, but he wasn't that.
No.
He wasn't that. Weird
meat on meat
town.
On muscle on meat
spray. I did find it funny that he, you know, he went to the tanning bed and stuff, and that was part of his character, right? And then when he quit, you did notice his tan went away.
Yeah,
and his roots started to show. And then when he decided to go back, he did spray tan, and it was a completely different orange.
Yeah, this is awesome.
I'm happy you liked it. I was a little trepidatious about it because I know we had talked about it. You don't like wrestling.
I was hoping this was going to explain things. It didn't, but it was still fucking great.
I would be interested to have you watch a month's worth of wrestling.
It explains some things, but the whole pick a guy with a story arc and a thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in this movie.
No, but because it's the story, assumed that you already followed him in the 80s.
Right.
And that's the other thing. That's a thing about wrestling. It's repetition breeds familiarity. And that once you get familiar, you start associating yourself with something that you like. So you find what kind of style of wrestling that you like, that kind of thing. Yep. So, you know by the end of the movie, what's the name of his finishing move?
The Ram Jam.
And what is it? It's basically a
flying
body press is what it is.
Right.
With elbows out, the horns are out. Well, you know that because you see it 6 times in 2 hours.
Right.
You watch 4 episodes of Raw, you're going to know whoever it is that you see that you glom onto.
No, not John Cena. You can't see him.
Well, not him. But I can tell you one of his moves is the 5-knuckle shuffle because I've seen it 15 times. And I know when he starts doing this, that's what's going to come next. And that familiarity makes you like it a little more. I'm not saying you should. Don't watch
Stockholm
wrestling.
Syndrome.
A little bit. It got me hostage. Let me go.
Okay. Whatever.
This makes up for me not talking the last 2 episodes.
This was fun.
I'm glad.
It's a society that has a huge fan base.
Huge.
I'm curious. Okay.
One thing that I do think it's interesting, since you speak about that, it is one that is very, because of the type of media that they do and the type of storylines, they have their pulse, their finger on the pulse of the nation. They're very...
I've noticed that.
So,
and that's why the 80s when we were in the Cold War was hyper America, yeah. And
right.
The Iron Sheik came from the Iran-Contra or the Iran hostage crisis.
Right.
And it was
exactly.
All born directly out of the world condition.
And you don't, and Sergeant Slaughter, right?
Yeah.
And you think about that, but you don't really think about it. Well, why do I hate the Iron Sheik? Because he's Iranian. That's why. Has nothing in the USA, has nothing to do with whether or not he can wrestle or not. It's all about his gimmick.
Right.
Sergeant Slaughter was a good guy turned bad guy. But then again, G.I. Joe, Sergeant Slaughter.
Right.
So, back in the 80s were awesome.
Was the main rivalry Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan? Who was the Iron Sheik's main
That was one,
opponent?
And then Sergeant Slaughter was another. Until Sergeant Slaughter did a heel turn, which was interesting, and he started working with the Iron Sheik.
Hmm.
The biggest rivalry probably then, Hulk Hogan versus Rowdy Piper.
Yeah, I know about that one.
And Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
No, my dad was there.
Really? At Madison Square, there was one at Madison Square Garden, and there was one that was, I think, WrestleMania that was out on a beach.
I think my dad was at one of them with my grandma.
Really?
That's
I've only been to one.
That's
live
like
of
a
that.
Thing, and I know that that just harks to the NFL. Oh, my dad was at the Ice Bowl. Well, everybody's fucking dad was at the Ice Bowl.
I think that was WrestleMania 3.
But my dad took my grandma like a far trip to see, and I am pretty damn sure that they were there when Hulk Hogan lifted Andre the Giant up.
Yeah, that would have been WrestleMania 3.
I'm pretty sure that's the one my dad took, because they went to see Hulk Hogan twice.
Mm-hmm.
I could be mistaking facts, and he'll probably yell at me later. But they were huge, important Hulk Hogan fights. So I'm pretty sure my dad was there. Cool. That's it. We're done.
I'm glad you liked it.
This movie's fucking legit. This movie is amazing. And I'm done talking about it.
Would you end up going and looking at some of the better matches on YouTube?
I'm not opposed. I just don't. I don't have frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have frame of reference.
That's fair enough. I do.
This is like how you felt about Lady Dynamite.
Probably.
Corn!
It was okay. It was there. But it's probably... I was excited as you were about it, and you're about as... Yeah, okay.
No,
as I was.
I wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But
okay.
Next episode.
You announce it. We've talked about it already. You do it.
We're coming up quick on episode 100,
mm-hmm.
which means that for our first anniversary, our 50 mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did The Godfather, which mm-hmm. was you assigning me.
Mm-hmm.
For episode 100, I have to assign to you.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get out of order, if I assign to you right now. So we're going to knock a twofer out really quick.
Yep.
Neither one of us have seen the movie that got Nicolas Cage Academy Award for Best Actor.
Wait, that happened?
I am 99% sure that this is the film. He's got an Oscar for Best Actor.
Does he really?
Yes. Look it up.
I am now.
While I describe that we are going to, as both of us being Coen Brothers fans, we are going to do the live action Wile E. Coyote, which is what I've been told.
What?
Is that was the original base concept, is what would happen if we did a live action version of Wile E. Coyote and The Roadrunner. And we're going to do Raising Arizona. And I'm actually excited because I've been told 50 billion times that I need to see this movie. And I can't explain. I guess it was before my time, maybe. And just, I'll blame my dad just because it's easy. But Raising Arizona. And then we get to do a whopper for episode 100, which will be a fucking ton of fun.
This is not, he did not win.
He did not win for this
one? That was for Leaving Las Vegas.
Leaving Las Vegas. That's right.
I don't think he was nominated for anything for this. But
this is apparently one of his best movies.
80% on IMDb, I believe. So can't be that bad, I guess. Huh. No, I'm sorry. 90%.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this movie. I've heard that I need to see it.
That's the only thing I know. That's the only thing I know. Is that's the...
Something about a baby.
Yeah. I think the baby's name is Arizona.
Maybe.
Which, Raising, I guess that's the joke.
I guess.
I don't know.
Didn't they make like a sitcom of this?
No, that's Two Men and a Baby.
No, not that.
Two Girls, a Guy in a Pizza Place.
No, not that. That's Ryan Reynolds.
Two Guys, a Girl in a Pizza Place?
No. Is Raising Hope. Raising Hope.
Raising the Pope?
Raising the Pope. Pooping the Hope. Poop.
Just keep going until we don't know
Toke
what
to... the Stoke.
Choke the Broke?
The Spice Must Flow.
Stop it.
I hated that movie.
Raising Arizona. Neg1cast. Facebook, Twitter, Gmail. Philadelphia. Sundays. Actually, Friday.
Yeah.
July 7th.
July 7th.
So. Bad advice bar crawl. Hashtag BAS bar crawl.
A month from now.
Yes.
Ish.
Whatever the time frame is, I have many miles to drive.
We
will be in Philly on South Street.
Yeah.
Still tentative, 5 p.m. at Tattooed Mom, where we will do a live podcast of some kind.
Probably.
And then we will shift over to the Woolly Mammoth at some point, and we will continue to party up and down High Street, South Street.
South Street.
I'm thinking Columbus. Keep on partying around South Street.
Oregon District. No, wait,
There will be specialty drinks, so there will be a Neg One Shot. There will be a Diamond Adam Worth experience. There will be alcohol. There will be partying. There will be fun. There will be jokes. There will be my Bim Bam references because probably. He's going.
I'll wear my button.
No, you won't.
Yeah, I will.
Oh, God. I'm uninviting you.
Fuck you. This is my vacation.
That's all I got. That's it.
See you next week. Is Raising Arizona?
The bird is the word. Come on now. The trash man. You know, did you ever play Counter-Strike back in the day?
Not really.
My favorite thing in Counter-Strike was the surf maps, because if you were to try and jump and then move forward on an angled surface, like to the side, your character would slide. And then you could control the slide and your speed by aiming. So they had maps called surf maps. And you could literally just surf your character around all these complex maps, and you'd be trying to kill each other at the same time.
Right.
So the goal, the whole point. The goal is either to make it to the finish line, and then your team...
Oh, there's a race?
Yeah. So they had it programmed to where if you hit the zone, it'd be the same as dropping and detonating the bomb at the same time.
Oh, okay.
That's the code that they invoked. So surf maps were a blast. But every time you played a surf map, there was 100% chance someone got on the voice chat with Trash Men. Bird is the
bird
word.
Makes sense.
And so in my head, that's what always comes up. It's just CS, it wasn't Go, 1.6, CS 1.6 surf maps.
So back when you gamed.
Yeah.
Like when you really gamed, because now you're like gamer light.
Counter-Strike, Diablo 2.
Diablo 2.
I love
it. And that is a...
Loved Diablo 2.
Suck. That explains why you still have my Diablo 3.
Yeah, that knife backlog of games so deep it hurts.
What else? What were your other ones?
Final Fantasy, Metal Gear Solid, and SOCOM.
Oh, SOCOM.
I thought SOCOM was so far superior to all the other shooters. Like third person, the maps were great. The weapons were fucking balanced. I thought SOCOM was the shit. One, two, and three. Unfortunately,
it was on the PlayStation 2, which...
It did not survive the translation to 3. There were so many other good first-person shooter multiplayers that SOCOM just did not survive past the third.
And that they never really was able to get it off the ground with the multiplayer because you had to buy the adapter. Yep. That was not... Halo was already doing what it was trying to do.
The PS2 Slim brought more people on board, but then the transition to PS3 and Call of Duty blowing the fuck up, they were done.
Which was interesting because they talked about that in this movie.
SOCOM was like my jam, dude.
I liked it. I had it prior. I had actually ended up buying a network adapter for it, but I got it specifically because I wanted to be able to command my team by voice. Yeah.
And that was in 3.
No, it was in the first one.
Oh, yeah.
The very first one had the headset and all that. And then
3 was a lot better.
It didn't work right on single player. And I didn't play online. So
SOCOM 3, they really ironed that out. But I miss those games. Those are some of those. If I had a nostalgia factor like series, man, it's SOCOM 1, 2, and 3 were just awesome.
For me, the ones that I would, because, you know, being older, I've always gamed. I never had that, you know, like glom on. But man, I played the fuck out of some Doom and Doom 2.
Never quite got on Doom. I played Wolfenstein.
See, I never really
played the first Doom, but yeah.
Yeah, no. Doom and Doom 2 were my jam back in the like late 90s.
Well, then what about Quake?
I never got into Quake because Quake was online only.
Oh, that's right.
And that was not a thing. But when I did finally start getting into online gaming, when broadband was a new thing and it was something that I actually got, Unreal Tournament.
Yeah.
Their very first Unreal Tournament,
it's a gold standard game.
Yes. I killed it that game.
It's kind of insane the Unreal Engine is still the best.
It's one of the best, yeah, for sure.
Out there.
But it's not like...
It's not the same one.
No.
It's been updated. Been tweaked and tweaked and tweaked. They're still killing it.
The id engine is good, too. And I'll tell you, I actually read... If you want to talk about shit from the 90s that is worth looking into... There's a book out there called Masters of Doom, which is a bio of id Software. John Carmack and John Romero creating id and creating Doom and the things that they did that created the computer gaming space that they get credit for, but they don't get credit for.
Right.
There's a reason why. The Nintendo in 1985 was doing things that you could not do on computer. You couldn't have a smooth scrolling map like Super Mario Brothers because the computer could not refresh that correctly. John Carmack, one of the programmers for Doom, created the process that allowed for smooth scrolling maps. They did that with Commander Keen. If you've ever heard of the Commander Keen game, that was the first game to ever do that. Something you learn. And the original Duke Nukems were like that. That using the same tricks. So those two pioneered, and that's a really good book that talks about the blow up, like the explosion of that, and then the first 3D games like Wolfenstein and Doom, and then the implosion with Daikatana and some of the things that happened with Quake, and I forget what the game was that killed John Romero in gaming. Anyway, I can go on this and wrestling apparently forever.
Shut up.
I will.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
NeoZaz.com